I enjoyed him too, and I liked the attention. My mother was violent. My father was sometimes very just checked out with his addiction. So somebody paying attention to me, like, that's such a ripe and fertile terrain through which a child can be abused, like trusting the adult.
All right, Rebecca. Rebecca, where are you from originally?
Yeah, I grew up in New Hampshire, southern New Hampshire, Nashua. That was where I, came of age there, but left pretty quickly as soon as I could. And I've been in Alaska for a while now, and that's really my home.
So the story you're about to tell is mostly in Alaska?
No, it's actually in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, okay.
Yeah.
Got it?
Yeah, really a Boston suburb.
And tell me about your family growing up.
I want to say that it probably looked normal on the surface, but I also am kind of like, was it really true? What was happening behind closed doors was a different story. So, you know, my mother was a homemaker, my father went to work, but I think that beyond that, the normalcy ends. You know, there's a lot of things that were happening that caused me to dissociate and suffer a lot later in life. I'm sure my parents themselves came through a lot of abuse. So, and I think that that normalcy on the surface, which I'm speaking of, probably caused me to feel like everything was okay. You know, like somebody's bringing in money and I've got food and shelter and clothing and I'm going to school. So everything must be fine and my parents are still married. But my mother had a dissociative identity disorder, formerly multiple personality disorder, and she had a Jekyll and Hyde personality. She would abuse me till I was unconscious.
What were her personalities?
Not remember.
Were there certain personalities that she would?
She had the ordinary personality, and then the main thing that I would see, she had like almost like a very young part, I want to say almost a child part, that would be emergent sometimes that needed care, and then another very violent part. And she would come out in that violent aspect and not remember what she had done. And I think I learned to forget what was happening inside of that. So she was sexually abusing me. And then my father worked with a military industrial complex, Lockheed Martin. He was working with the CIA and NASA through subcontracts with, contracted with military, naval intelligence. So he traveled a lot. I didn't know too much because he had a high clearance. I didn't know what he was involved with. It wasn't till he died 5 years or so, 2020, he died. And on his deathbed, he revealed a lot about the secrecy of his work. But back to my early life, he was a severe alcoholic and also sexually abused me. So there was just a lot of instability there. But I think the story that I have today isn't just about mother, father, natal family. When I was born, I was given to my father's best friend. I call him Mr. E, who also worked in the same sort of deep black that my father did. He was, I come to understand now through more sophisticated adult eyes that he was a handler. And he owned me from the time I was born till the time I was seven. And he trafficked me into child pornography.
Why would your parents allow that?
I don't know if they knew, and that may be naive on my part. I think especially my father probably had some idea, but I don't know. I wish I had asked him that before he had passed away. I wish I had asked, but I didn't have the courage. Did you know? Because I think I didn't want to know. Mm. And Dad was gone a lot, so anything could be happening. And my mother adored this man, Mr. E, you know, my godfather. She thought the world of him. He would come bringing gifts, and you know, he was grooming me.
He had everyone's special. He had everyone's trust.
Yes, complete and utter trust. I'm just pausing, journeying back into that landscape, and that terrain of my life. So, yeah, I think with everybody enjoying him so much, I enjoyed him too, and I liked the attention. My mother was violent. My father was sometimes very just checked out with his addiction. So somebody paying attention to me, like that's such a ripe and fertile terrain through which a child can be abused, like trusting the adult. Yeah. So I didn't, I didn't really realize what was happening to me. And for the first few years of life, my main memories come around age 3 or 4. For the first couple of years, I don't know exactly how he was using me. I would be gone for a few days with him. I remember going in a vehicle, waving to my mom, and my mom's all excited. Oh, you're going off with your godfather. That's great. And also, he had come out of the military. He was with the Air Force. He had a private plane and a pilot's license, and we flew places with other kids. And I don't have – my recall is, you know, it's in fits and starts. Around age 4 is when they really start getting clear. And he would take me to events with other children that were in – like concrete, cold environments. I don't know exactly where. We were hypnotized and also drugged. And I don't know. I suspect ketamine or its analog, which, you know, causes complete amnesia and compliance, utter and complete compliance. So it's amazing that I've been able to have recall about any of these experiences. And with that, I want to say, too, there's some element of want to know, don't want to know. Want to know, don't want to know. And as I've aged, and Mr. E died just over a year ago, and that's when, like, a flood of memories started coming back. Because it's like, what? It's safe to remember. As my father was dying, it was safe to remember what he had, you know, had done to me. And my mother is still alive in her very late 80s. So I think this is just a time in my life where a lot is coming up from the depths of my psyche that I kept and evolved forever to stay safe. And I tried to move on with my life. But in the scenarios that he brought me into, I was so deviant. And I think that's why I couldn't look at this for so long, because I didn't want to believe it was true. Like, how much depravity are we capable of as humans, right? Shocking. I think also because it was like, this is my family, and this happened with the people who are supposed to be protecting me, and they're supposed to care about me, and all of that. I'm sure you've heard this before, like, how does this happen? I and the other children were raped in horrible ways, horrifying ways. Anally, a lot of oral rape. I had dental issues and things with my jaw that I kind of wonder why there wasn't any flag at my school about the physical signs that I was having. And I think again, that what's coming to my mind here with you now is, like, I felt special, and so I was complacent with the abuse. And if you add drugging on top of that, you know, you're not going to fight. I feel like I almost looked forward to him coming for me, even though that's very twisted, extremely twisted. But when you're a kid, this becomes normalized. This is what the people who love you do to you.
Especially when it starts at such a young age.
Starts so soon, you don't have a chance to
you don't know right from wrong or up from down.
Well, and even I think about this too, as I work with my young parts that are, they don't have language yet. Things happened to me before I could speak, before I could walk or talk. So that, you know, sort of the odds are a bit stacked against you when that's going on. Like I'm proud of the journey I've made since then. And it went on for so many years, yeah.
How long did this go on?
Well, he moved on out of my life when I was 7. And that's the last, yeah.
You aged out?
Yeah, yeah. That was it. I was too old. After age 7, you're done. I think they can only use you for so long. And there might have been things going on that would, like, be, you know, was something happening that I might be in a compromised position, according to their mind, you know, that I would tell, or, you know, would they get in trouble in some way? I'm trying to find which way to go, and it's emotional. I mean, you can't tell the story without some of that. But it seems like a ripe time on our planet for this to all be coming up and out, so
absolutely,
this collective can heal.
So much of it gets hidden.
It's so, in anything, a wound that's kept in secrecy and darkness is just going to fester.
Yep.
And I think that's part of why I'm here. It's not just for me, but for this is still going
that's
on.
Why I'm
that's
here.
What pains me. I'm 53. This happened 50 years ago. Oh, my God. I can't. It pains me to think that there are, as we speak, children in our world that are being trafficked into all kinds of sex trafficking. You know about this. This is, you know, you hear about lots of this. And it's my job as a survivor, I think, at this point, because I've healed so much, to be able to tell the story. And I don't think people know necessarily the depravity. It's not, this wasn't just my godfather and I in a back room with a camera. He was a photographer. But there was more to it. You know, I was raped with objects. I had a gun in my mouth, a gun in my vagina, loaded guns. They filmed that. And I wish I could unforget that. You know, I wish I would not remember that. I'm not saying that to traumatize your audience or anybody else, but the level of deviance has no ceiling with this kind of group. And I recognize, too, that I never looked at this, you know, as I kind of tried to grow up and go on with my life, bandage things up and move on. I didn't realize the sophistication and the precision and the intelligence involved in what would, I would say now, would be an organized crime network. It was much bigger than him. I think he was being handled by people, too. I mean, I can't say, I don't know. I was a kid. But just looking at it with, again, the adult mind, adult perspective, there's something else going on there. In I said I survived. And this is the most, I think, the tragic piece and horrifying piece and the piece that has caused so much dissociation for me. Children were killed in these scenarios. And I watched that. I watched them die. I watched children die. I can't forget that. And I survived, so I have to be here. They didn't all live. Sometimes in order to program us, child's death would be sexualized and filmed. I don't know how they got away with that.
How are they not investigated?
How are they not investigated? That's my question.
And you saw this happen?
Yeah.
Can I ask how it happened?
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's like we said, if it's held in darkness, it doesn't heal. And the wounds, in a way, belong to our whole society. It's part of the programming and part of the filming. I could shoot a child. Let's say, if you ever tell, this is what will happen to you. They will kill you. And so, causes, even as I say it, some level of dissociation. Like, I can see those events as if I'm far, far away, up ahead, up above, in the sky. Yeah. I felt at those moments almost as if I was dying. Probably because of the drugs and because of a very empathetic, empathic child. Like, I felt myself leaving with them. And I was brought close to death myself. In a way, sadists enjoy that. There's some kind of hit they get off of bringing a child, particularly, and the flavor of innocence inside of that, bringing them close to suffocation, strangulation, these things. I felt like I could feel like what it was like to die. And maybe that gave me, in a twisted kind of backhand way, gave me the ability to understand something about our spiritual nature, or at a young age that we're, I believe now, in adult language, I would say we are spiritual beings having a material experience here on Earth. Like, there's more to the story. And maybe those near-death experiences and more, you know, gave me some understanding, something beyond the veil, something of the mystery of our existence. Maybe that's how I have to look at it now, or something. There's some silver lining in there. Not that there should be a silver lining inside of this. It's really beyond words.
So, how has this affected you as in your adult life?
It was bad for a while. Bad for, I mean.
How could it not be?
Yeah, how could it not be? I left there as soon as I could. You know, I went away and tried to pull my life together and go to college. It didn't work. I was falling apart with eating disorders, and I was very suicidal. I never went into drugs and alcohol, but I was hospitalized because I didn't want to be here anymore. It was everything. I was having nightmares, and in the nightmares that came in my teens, there would be wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling, like Polaroid pictures of me in sexual positions, either by myself or with men, as a child.
Did you ever question whether these memories
were real? I totally did. I wanted them, every bit of them, to not be real. You know, I didn't want this to be, any of it to be true. Yeah. I questioned it and questioned it and questioned it for years, and I just tried to put it away.
What helped you determine that they were real?
Well, I'll tell you something. In the last months, when I said Mr. E had died just over a year ago, in the last months I've been overtaken at night by child parts that were part of me that I didn't know. And they were terrifying, what they had to say, like coming up and out of me, overtaking my body and my consciousness. My partner was with me while this was happening one night, and I said I wanted him to film it and get this on record. Like, we have to remember this. Remember this, Chris, because I'm not going to. You have to. This is fucking real. I can't make this up. And these child parts of me were outlining some of the memories that I already knew, but different things, how we were taken and what was done to us. And they were screaming, and they said, they heard us, they heard us, they heard us. I tell it now, I tell it now. I say it. Because it's trying to break through the programming that I'll be killed if I tell. I was kind of nervous coming to your studio today.
Have you told these stories before?
Not to this level and not to this depth, because more has come up in the recent months. And it's brought it home in new ways. Like, okay, I can't deny this anymore.
Did you ever report it to law enforcement? Yeah.
And I've wondered about that, Mark. And what do we do decades later? Who do I go to, the police, the FBI? Like, who? I don't know. And I think that's why I started to talk about it, because I don't know that I can go through any of those channels 50 years later, right? But I can't speak. At least I can speak to all of this, and especially for those kids who didn't make it out. I don't know. I haven't known what to do. And like I said, for decades, it was like, just put it over here. It's probably not true. I want it to not be true. I just hope this was a fucking fiction, because it's so bad. I want this to end, you know. It's a miracle that I'm still here, and like, I've pulled my life very well together. That wasn't true for many years. Like I said, I didn't go into drugs and alcohol, but I became like an Uber athlete. All I did was train. I was living in Colorado at the time. I was mountaineering and rock climbing and mountain bike racing, multi-adventure sport racing kind of thing. Socially acceptable addiction, but it was there that I found, you know, I could run away, but also be strong. And like, I could never protect myself in those situations. But I think helped me feel steadier inside myself.
You've seen therapists, I'm sure.
Yes, I had. I did back in those years when I said, you know, I was having those, all the nightmares and all the night terrors and crazy things coming up at night. I was in therapy, but when I tried to talk about this to the therapist I was seeing, she didn't really know what to do with it. It wasn't the most successful, but I went back in other, I just thought, I stopped seeking to talk about that and just went in because I was a mess. Help me, I need to talk about something. My psyche's not well. You know, I knew I needed help. And sometimes I would just sit in the therapist's office and cry. Like, what happened to you? I don't know. And I found other kinds of therapy. Somatic experiencing is a newer modality that wasn't available in the 70s and 80s or 90s. And helps kind of wring out unprocessed trauma from the body. So because I had such bad PTSD and panic attacks and these things, I was in a on a training ride in northern New Mexico in 2012, February 17th, 2012, and I had a head injury quite bad. And it was after that time that also there was another like break where more memories were coming up after that. I think it did something to my brain that I don't know how to explain this. Maybe a neuroscientist could tell me what happened in that moment of collision. Did it bring things back that had been locked in amnesia? I think our subconscious and also the soma know exactly what's happened to us. And at that, after that point, I started I didn't know what else to do because my life was quite painted into a corner. I started meditating. Like, I don't know what the fuck happened to me, but I gotta sit. I don't know what else to do, but I have to do this. And I just started a practice where I was just working with the breath, and things began to emerge from my subconscious. Now, I didn't go to meditation because I wanted that. You know, I wasn't looking for psychic information or intuitive opening. That certainly happened, but I knew I needed to just sit with my experience and be brave. Like, what is in me that I'm so frightened of? What is this thing? So trying to access, the meditation did lead to a great spiritual awakening, which I never wanted and wasn't seeking after that bit. It also, I realize now, again, this is how many years later, 13, 16, 14 years on, I have a daily meditation practice, which I credit entirely with how well I am sitting here speaking to this now, and how my life has blossomed so much. But it also deepens our brainwave state. And through that, you know, if we move from the beta brainwave state through which we're speaking now into the alpha and theta and so on, you can access what's in the subconscious mind and start to work. For an example I might give is working with the very young parts that don't have language, the pre-verbal types of trauma, like those sort of baby parts come up and out of me, or I can relate to what I would call the inner child aspects. I've worked heavily in my healing path with like interfacing with these child parts, the parts that came up, you know, in more recent times, the last few months, wailing and screaming and writhing and making gestures like they were being violated. I didn't have control over that, but I can and have interfaced them like, hey, sweetie, what do you need? I hear you and I see the story, and I know you suffered, and you weren't the only one who suffered. What do those kids need? They need to feel safe and loved. So retroactively, I can reparent those children. That's a gift. We have that in us to do that no matter what has happened to us. We get to be the master of that. Or reparent, you know, give yourself what you didn't have. And I think that's a powerful kind of soul retrieval in a way. You know, we can kind of go back retroactively and heal something. Yeah.
Were you ever able to tell your parents? Never?
No. I had mentioned some sexual abuse that happened with a cousin to my mother at one point in maybe my 20s, and she just dismissed it. She wrote it off. Like, oh, you must be just imagining that. Hmm. Like, okay, let's put my toe in the water. Okay, let's go.
There's two children that were murdered. There was no investigation after that?
I can't imagine it. I don't know. I was so young. I don't know what would have happened. I'm not sure, and that's, I guess, something I will always wonder about that.
But you watched it. Wow.
And I think, you know, something happens when it's almost like something so, it's beyond shocking. It's beyond human language as we speak to this in limited, crude terms, the only thing we have right now, that shatters and fragments everything, and every psyche in the room is totally blown. You know, the circuits are blown. And it can cause such dissociation that almost nobody will remember. It's like, there's a child gone missing, but you think of that moment of horror if you had a car accident or something. It's like, I think it can cause a lot of forgetting is the only word that comes. I don't know if that's the right word. Beyond forgetting. Like, that never happened.
It's so horrific.
Yeah.
that it just, I just have to ask, like, there's no way you just imagined this or created it in your mind?
I suppose that's always possible, but I recall it, the body recalls it, and those child parts that came up recently through me in such a visceral, kind of shocking way. Really, we're talking about that. Yeah.
Were there other, a lot of other kids that went through similar things?
It always seemed like there would be a few. It wasn't like scads of kids in the room. And maybe that was to keep us from talking to each other or connecting or bonding, like keep it kind of small.
I can imagine if he's doing it with too many kids, eventually one of them's going to speak up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine, again, this is with my adult mind, more sophisticated bird's eye view, or in hindsight, they would have selected the children that would be less likely to have anybody to tell that would believe them, or came from homes that were disturbed, where there wouldn't be any safe place for them to go. And that would be, as I was, kind of, oh, I feel special, these people pay attention to me, they, some distorted mental narrative that we might have when we're very young about what's going on. And I think once they do that and they threaten you with death, you will never tell anyone. Never.
Yeah. That's totally understandable.
Yeah.
Especially after seeing something like what you saw. Mm-hmm. Like, you're never going to say a word to anybody.
And that's the thing, too. It does make you doubt. What's, is this true? Could this be a fiction? I had hoped so for so long. I do feel like there was a very high level of precision involved in this, though. When I look at it, could they have covered their tracks easily? I don't know. Maybe. I won't know, but more to the point is that I'm able to still be here and speak to this issue.
You seem,
I think so,
pretty together, considering what you've been through.
That's a miracle. And maybe that speaks to what I said earlier about the nature of the soul. Maybe I'd call it the nature of the soul, our spiritual existence here. Is there something bigger? You know, I said in other interviews, you know, I think I came here to explore the belly of the beast and to be part of its undoing. If we talk about the big spectrum of, I believe we have other lifetimes. In fact, that's been part of my journey. I'm a mother and father with the Crow tribe. You know, I have been shown lifetimes, past lives, with a Native woman, the Crow people. And a mother and father came in 2018. I just call them that. And they were a big part of my healing. They just helped me a lot. And maybe they were those parents that I never had. But she said, mother has always said, there's a point to why I'm going down that rabbit hole. She said that if it happens to one person in the tribe, everyone carries the wound. And that has stayed with me. We're all holding this. Like, you're holding so much. And you listen to these stories every day, day in and day out. You're holding a lot.
Yeah.
You have a bigger mission. So I think some of us come in to experience certain things, you know, before we're incarnated. I know that that's not maybe germane to how everyone understands how this world works in your audience, you know, but that's my perspective given the sort of the psychic gates that have opened for me and how I understand the bigger picture of what's going on here. And we're moving through incredibly tough times on this planet. Understatement. I know I don't have to say that. Everyone knows that. But maybe that's the bigger reason of why I'm still here and have been able to become well and also help other people heal. You know, that's a miracle that I'm like the classic wounded healer archetype, able to bring medicine and go down into the dark places where maybe other healers can't. I can hold that space. And you, I think, have a gift with that as well.
Do you have regrets about how you handled everything? Do you wish you had?
That's a great question.
Wish you had spoken up or something?
I wish I had. Before my father died, if I would have asked him, I was too scared. My father dying, you know, like you said, did you ever confront your parents? Did they know what was happening? I was too scared to ask my father. Point blank, did you know what your best friend was bringing me to? Do you know how I was treated? Did you know this went on for years? Where were you? I never did that, I think, because I didn't want to know. But to your point about regret, I mean, maybe that's one of them. And if I had had my stuff more together earlier in my life, could I have gone to law enforcement or something? Would somebody believe me about what I had seen? But I was so young. I just couldn't. And I was all the programming to not tell. And that's been a really destructive thing in my life. And coming back into healing, and even part of the path for me right now as we're speaking, has been like, I'm not responsible for my own victimization. I'm not responsible for the deaths, and I'm not responsible for the perpetrators. I'm responsible for my healing and doing all I can to bring goodness to this world now. That's my responsibility. But to understand that I didn't, you know, there's always this, I see it in clients that I serve as well. Like, when there's abuse, we blame ourselves, especially when we're kids. I did it. It must have been my fault. And I've had to go back and rewrite the script over and over and over so that I can stop taking responsibility in the ways we're speaking to in this abuse scenario, but also in little ways where I, you know, oh, I'm so sorry about that thing. And that thing isn't even my fault. So just kind of reconditioning, again, working with the subconscious mind, I've been able to unravel that. And that's my life is a total work in progress, but but that's, you know, I've been able to, a lot of different avenues through which healing has come to me, and I'm an ongoing project, and I'm very grateful that I have had, yeah, just something in me stabilized. You know, my relationships with men early on were challenging at best, and remain a little, there's a fear of men, of love, of intimacy to some degree. You know, it's very quiet.
That's to be expected.
But yeah, it's like, oh, I see that, but I'm working on it. You know, I see that and I can work to recondition those beliefs that are held in the subconscious due to the abuse, right? But it's liberating to know that I'm responsible for that healing. I didn't put that there, but I can do something about it. I find that incredibly empowering.
So the abuse that you had to go through sounds like child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Were there other things that you had to go through?
That's the main, that's the main thing. That's the main thing that's kind of been on the menu for me recently. There was some dark occult abuse in my mother's side of the family, which, you know, her father was a reverend, playing kind of on both sides. I would call him a bit of a black magician. And there's some very fragmented memories that I think will come back probably more after my mother's passed away. Kind of deviant things that I just need to keep sitting with. And say, like, is this real? Again, the things that look normal on the surface, but that there's other elements at play here. I think all of the main abuses were sexual in nature and happened in the first few years of life. That impacts you for so long. And I know there's hope for us as humans, as we are all kind of moving through some kind of insanity together. And there's a lot of love in my heart. I feel like, too, to look at Mr. E and the people who are involved in all this, was he not handled himself? Was he had a boss? He didn't mastermind this whole thing. So I wonder how much my father and he and other men were kind of, you know, what is the best way to compromise somebody? Film them having sex with a child. 100% hands down. So in that case, it becomes less about sex and power. It's a power hierarchy in here. And I would say a kind of blackmail scheme. To the degree that this was carried out and went on for so long and seemed to have been organized. But my point was that did Mr. E and other people involved themselves experience some deep trauma, and how is that trauma cycle ending? You know, are we, everybody's response, they're responsible for what they carried out there, 100%. But also, I would say, you know, if I look at how we began, my mother and father, they came from traumatized backgrounds, so we got to end the cycle somewhere.
Were there other adults around when this was all going on?
Mm-hmm. When he would take me to these, I don't know what else to call them beside events. Yes, there was other. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It wasn't just Mr. E and this group of kids. There were other men there and other various different abusers. I don't remember all their faces, and maybe that's to my advantage that I don't. I remember. Yeah, I always remember the weight of their bodies and the smell and just faded kind of. Yeah.
And this was happening in New Hampshire?
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't. We would go at night, and I don't know exactly where. I don't have a vision in my mind of, like, the place, the street, and also where he was flying me to. He had a, you know, I don't know where. I wish I had more of those details. I don't know. There's so many things unanswered. As much as I do know, there's a lot that I don't. And maybe, like I've said here too today, I think probably in some way to my advantage that I don't know all there is to know. The push and pull of the need to remember, the need to forget, I think is still somewhat alive in me, you know. The need to speak the story is apparently winning. That's
today.
Good. That's
today
good.
It is.
Yeah. There's hope inside of that.
No, you're very strong and brave for doing this.
Yeah. I hope it inspires other people to, you don't have to go through what I've been through to have something you might need to look at. I say that to all of us. So you're on the human journey. We all go through suffering and painful things. So just, I think whatever we've been through, deep in our core, we are resourced at a deeply humbling human level to do business with whatever's happened, even to befriend it, so we can take our lives back from the clutches of whatever it was. So hopefully there's, I don't know, deeper inspiration to those people who are watching him.
Do you see what happened to you and these people as some evil, or do you see it as just they came from dysfunction and they're just...
I think it's symptomatic of a culture that's gone down the wrong road. I don't have any, and this is, I find this really, what's the word I'm looking for? Shocking in a way to me that I don't have like a big vendetta. I really don't. And maybe because I see the suffering inside, why heap more for suffering? You know, I want you dead. I want you, I just want people to heal. I don't have any kind of retribution or any violence inside of me. I went through anger, but mostly it was directed at myself and self-violence, self-mutilation in a way, or self-aggression. I took the anger out and probably on me. I don't even have much anger about it anymore. It's just like, I think what I said rings true. It's like, I just want people to heal. And if you've done something that you know wasn't right, like, you're not beyond redemption. You're not beyond redemption. I think the human heart is something we all have, and we can always turn toward that light instead of the darkness, no matter how far down the path of darkness we have gone. There's something inside of this us, like a flame that can't be extinguished. It's always there. I find that so inspiring. Really. My heart is really full of that. Yeah. So thank you for that question. I think that was a good one, because it feels good and like spacious and airy in my being that I don't have a lot of like, I really want to harm somebody, because I was.
It's a reflection on how mentally healthy you are.
Maybe so. Thank you. That's a compliment. Yeah, I worked hard to get here, toiling in my own quiet way for many years.
Now, the fact that you're keeping it together, having gone through that, it's like that just shows your strength.
Well, in my view, maybe strength garnered over many lifetimes. I don't know. Yeah. And like I said before, too, the work that I do with others, it's intuitive and even psychic in nature. I'm a bit of a psychic therapist. And all of this has given me the capacity to work with others in beautiful ways that are helping
them. What are you doing currently?
I'm a medium. I'm an intuitive Yeah. When I started meditating, so we talked about that here, back in 2012, I had this huge, like, psychic, I can't call it anything else but a psychic awakening. Like, I started seeing things beyond the veil and receiving information that is very psychic in nature. Maybe not possible with our conventional understanding of reality, but nevertheless, it was true. And I eventually just was called into doing readings for people because they might be having this, that, or the other going on, and I could bring them information and then become a bit of a spiritual guide as a result. And became a healer, too. I would say I'm a heart seer. You know, I can see from my own heart, I can see what's going on in your heart, and we can work together to liberate that. You know, everybody's carrying grief and wounds.
We all are.
Yeah, large and small. It doesn't matter. But a lot of people say to me, well, I haven't been through what you've been through, but that's not, there's no hierarchy here. We've all been through shit. That's part of the human journey. But I love that I've survived and can now use all that darkness that was visited upon me to bring in light. That's powerful. And there's something at work that's bigger than me. Some people might call it the universe or God or the quantum field. It works in mysterious ways. And so this is maybe, I like to think maybe this is it too, Mark, you know, when I say, I don't know if I have survivor's guilt. We could argue that for a while. Maybe I do. But that maybe it retroactively brings something to the table that I couldn't offer when I was a young child to those who did not survive. I have to bring help now to somebody. And that feels good. That feels right.
You're doing it by giving this talk.
Yeah.
All right, Rebecca. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
I think you're amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.